Although it had just finished raining, the air was hot and close. Nobody else was in sight. The only sound, other than those from insects and gulls, was the staticky, low crashing of Caribbean waves. Around me on the sparsely covered red soil was a scatter of rectangles laid out by lines of stones, the outlines of now-vanished buildings, revealed by archaeologists. Cement pathways, steaming faintly from the rain, ran between them. One of the buildings had more imposing walls than the others. The researchers had covered it with a new roof, the only structure they had chosen to protect from the rain. Standing like a sentry by its entrance was a hand-lettered sign, Casa Almirante, Admiral's House. It marked the first American residence of Christopher Columbus, Admiral of the Ocean Sea, the man whom generations of schoolchildren have learned to call the discoverer of the New World. La Isabela, as this community was called, is situated on the north side of the great Caribbean island of Hispaniola, in what is now the Dominican Republic. It was the initial attempt by Europeans to make a permanent base in the Americas. To be precise, La Isabela marked the beginning of consequential European settlement. Vikings had established a short-lived village in Newfoundland 5 centuries before. The admiral laid out his new domain at the confluence of 2 small, fast-rushing rivers, a fortified center on the north bank, a satellite community of farms on the south bank. For his home, Columbus, Cristobal Colón, to give him the name he answered to at the time, chose the best location in town, a rocky promontory in the northern settlement, right at the water's edge. His house was situated perfectly to catch the afternoon light. Today, La Isabela is almost forgotten. Sometimes a similar fate appears to threaten its founder. Colón is by no means absent from history textbooks, of course, but in them he seems ever less admirable and important. He was a cruel, deluded man, today's critics say, who stumbled upon the Caribbean by luck. An agent of imperialism, he was in every way a calamity for the America's first inhabitants. Yet a different but equally contemporary perspective suggests that we should continue to take notice of the admiral. Of all the members of humankind who have ever walked the earth, he alone inaugurated a new era in the history of life. The King and Queen of Spain, Fernando, Ferdinand II, and Isabel I, backed Colón's first voyage grudgingly. Transoceanic travel in those days was heart-stoppingly expensive and risky, the equivalent, perhaps, of space shuttle flights today. Despite relentless pestering, Colón was able to talk the monarchs into supporting his scheme only by threatening to take the project to France. He was riding to the frontier, a friend wrote later, when the Queen sent a court bailiff post-haste to fetch him back. The story is probably exaggerated. Still, it is clear that the sovereign's reservations drove the admiral to whittle down his expedition, if not his ambitions, to a minimum. 3 small ships, the biggest may have been less than 60 feet long, a combined crew of about 90. Colón himself had to contribute 1/4 of the budget, according to a collaborator, probably by borrowing it from Italian merchants. Everything changed with his triumphant return in March of 1493, bearing golden ornaments, brilliantly colored parrots, and as many as 10 captive Indians. The king and queen, now enthusiastic, dispatched Colón just 6 months later on a 2nd, vastly larger expedition. 17 ships, a combined crew of perhaps 1,500, among them a dozen or more priests charged with bringing the faith to these new lands. Because the admiral believed he had found a route to Asia, he was sure that China and Japan, and all their opulent goods, were only a short journey beyond. The goal of this 2nd expedition was to create a permanent bastion for Spain in the heart of Asia, a headquarters for further exploration and trade.